to this. Don't discriminate, tolerance is bliss. We got to get together on this. Cross this problem off our list. I may stutter when I speak, but you don't need to call me a freak. It's not trigonometry. Inside we're the same.
Welcome to the Wind Machine podcast, not your average Eurovision podcast. My name's Danny Tregoning, and today I'm joined by the skier to my boiled sheep's head, Mark Perkins.
Hello, boiled sheep's head Danny. What the heck? What?
Okay, look, everyone eats sheep.
Right.
In Iceland.
But they boil their sheep's head?
Yes.
Is it on display?
Yes.
Oh.
It's a delicacy. They take the brain out, thank God.
Okay.
So and like then they boil it.
Temple of Doom and when you chill.
It's a little bit Temple of Doom, yes. I've seen photos on Google and I thought, But you're not asking me what Skyr is.
What is Skyr? Oh, you said soft cheese like yogurt.
Yeah, it's a soft cheese like yogurt. So you kind of have it in a tub like you would like Yoplait or whatever.
Okay, and it's cheesy.
And it's got like no fat.
Oh.
So a lot of people have it sort of all day long, really.
All day long.
All day.
All day.
Oh, dear, I'm so sorry. Okay. We've started off weird. Now, we're just going to put this out here that, Icelandic.
You thought our pronunciation was bad in pretty much every other episode we've done so far.
It's going to be phenomenal for this one.
Oh, yeah.
Whew, I've tried really hard to use good old pronouncenames.com to try and get some of these amazing words written down phonetically in English, but we're still going to stumble.
Of course we are.
You know what didn't stumble? Our entry song.
My favourite song of all time.
Your favourite song of all time.
Polapunk's No Prejudice, which just so happened to come 15th in the 2014 final on 58 points.
Now, we didn't use it because we played it in our first ever episode back in June 2016.
And it's now July 2018.
And we're still doing season one.
Yes, I've only got a few episodes left.
I only got a few episodes left, and then we're going to do some kind of funky stuff to end the year on.
Yes.
Gonna have some fun.
Gonna have some really, really good fun.
Oh, yeah. Last episode, we picked Iceland out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom, and we're focusing on our favourites based on a jury of two. We have...
Listening to Eurovision every day. This is my life.
Art supplies? Yes, please.
You don't have to tell me twice.
Justice for Greta! Sorry.
And a fabulous second place song. So, let's begin.
Iceland is a Nordic country in the North Atlantic with a population of 348,000 and an area of 103 kilometres squared, making it the most sparsely populated country in Europe. The capital and largest city is Reykjavik. Reykjavik and the surrounding areas of the southwest of the country are home to over two-thirds of the population. According to the ancient manuscript, the Landnámabók, the settlement of Iceland began in 874 AD when Norwegian chieftain Eigunulf Arnason, God, he sounds, doesn't he? became the first permanent settler on the island. In the following centuries, Norwegians and, to a lesser extent, other Scandinavians emigrated to Iceland, bringing with them slaves of Gaelic origin. The country's cultural heritage includes traditional Icelandic cuisine, sheep's head, Icelandic literature and medieval sagas. Nothing like Bold and the Beautiful. Iceland has the smallest population of any NATO member. According to the Global Peace Index, Iceland is the most peaceful country in the world due to its lack of armed forces, low crime rate, and high level of socio-political stability. Iceland is listed in the Guinness World Records book as the country ranked most at peace with the lowest military spending per capita.
Funny that. Lowest, what was it? Lowest military spending per capita and it's ranked most at peace. Does that mean the United States with the most military spending per capita is the most at war? Wait, yes, that's true.
Funny that. Yeah, funny how that happens.
Iceland's first national flag was a white cross on a deep blue background. It was first shown in parade in 1897. The modern flag dates from 1915, when a red cross was inserted into the white cross of the original flag. This cross represents Christianity. It was adopted and became the national flag when Iceland gained independence from Denmark in 1918. For the Icelandic people, the flag's colouring represents a vision of their country's landscape. The colours stand for three of the elements that make up the island. Red is for the fire produced by the island's volcanoes, white recalls the ice and snow that covers Iceland, and blue is for the blueness of the mountains.
Iceland's official written and spoken language is Icelandic, a northern Germanic language ascended from Old Norse. In grammar and vocabulary, it has changed less from Old Norse than other Nordic languages. Icelandic has preserved more verb and noun inflections and has a more considerable extent developed new vocabulary based on native roots other than borrowings from other languages. Icelandic Sign Language was officially recognised as a minority language in 2011. In education, its use for Iceland's deaf community is regulated in the National Curriculum Guide. English and Danish are compulsory subjects in the school curriculum. English is widely understood and spoken, while basic to moderate knowledge of Danish is common among older generations. Polish is mostly spoken by the local Polish community, the largest minority in Iceland, and Danish is mostly spoken in a way largely comprehensible to Swedes and Norwegians and is often referred to as Skandinavia, which is Scandinavian in Iceland.
Of course it is. Rather than using family names, as is the usual custom in most Western nations, Icelanders carry patronymic and matronymic surnames, patronyms being far more commonly practiced. Patronymic last names are based on the first name of the father, while matronymic names are based on the first name of the mother. Consequently, Icelanders refer to one another by their given name, and the Icelandic telephone directory is listed alphabetically by first name rather than surname. All new names must be approved by the Icelandic Naming Committee.
You can't call your child Darth Vader if you live in Iceland.
Right.
There is a certain list. I actually read this once. I think it was on Mental Floss.
Yeah.
That they have really strict regulations on what names you can actually name your children.
Wow.
Which is pretty good. Because Darth Vader is not a very nice name for a child.
It's not really Icelandic either.
No, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
You know, this Eurovision thing has kind of taken over our lives.
Oh, it sure has.
And it's a good thing.
Yes.
Because we learn about different cultures.
Yes.
And we stuff up other languages.
Yes,
very and much. We've made a lot of friends.
Of course.
So I thought this song was pretty apt to put in the podcast. From 2008, here is This Is My Life by Euroband.
I spend my days in vain just waiting for happiness to come my way. I opened my eyes, finally I realized. the key to set myself free.
You'll be amazed, 'cause I have the power to change my way. This is my life. This is my life. Oh, I don't wanna change a thing. This is my life. This is my life. All the pain, all the joy it brings. All through the years, blood, sweat and tears, hopes and my fears.
Band is an Icelandic techno pop and dance duo consisting of Frederik Ómar and Regina Ósk, who together represented Iceland in the Eurovision Song Contest 2008 in Belgrade. They formed their little duo in 2006. Frederik, born 1981, is an Icelandic singer and used to sing and play drums with his mum. He tried out for Eurovision in 2007 in the Icelandic National Finals and came second. He also did backup vocals for Johanna in 2009. Regina, born in 1977, woo, represent, in Reykjavik, is also an Icelandic singer. Well, that would work, wouldn't it? She has participated for Iceland in the Eurovision Song Contest in 2001, 2003, 2005 as a backing vocal, and 2008 with Euroband. She studied classical singing at university. The song came 14th in the final on 64 points. You were not sure about this one because I just kept kind of grooving to it when we were going through our jury of two moment.
Yes.
It's grown on you, hasn't it?
Of course it has. And after rewatching the video clip,
Yeah, I think you might like Regina just a little bit.
Oh, she's all right.
Yeah, she's all right. Yeah, at least she's appropriately aged.
Yeah, not like our last song of the podcast, which we'll get into later.
Yeah, she's very young. She's very pretty, though. Spoilers, sweetie. The official clip, we were kind of a bit confused whether or not this was actually an endorsed official clip, but it's actually been uploaded by Euroband.
Yeah.
So it must be.
It was very bizarre to start with.
Okay. There's a guy in his bedroom. He sings into his duster to the song. I do that quite often. You don't get to see that. Then this other random guy appears and they dance a lot. And then the random guy gets on the bed and then disappears into thin air. Weird. Then suddenly our main guy is in the official Euroband clip. And he's got one of those keytars. It's very awesome.
He's sort of like their mascot in a way.
Yeah, kind of. It's really weird. Then it kind of gets to the end of the song and he's transported back to his bedroom. Was it all a dream?
I think it was all a dream. His dream of being in Euroband.
Yeah, maybe. It's very cute. If you have a chance, just look it up because it's quite... I think we all rock out like that when no one's watching.
Of course we do.
I don't know about singing into my duster, though. That could be a bit kind of gross. But spoons?
Yeah.
Or just even your hand. You know, when you sing into your hand with your ear mic,
yeah,
it works.
Just as long as you're not using any other type of phallic object that's inappropriate for that kind of thing.
That's true.
Sorry. I had to go there.
That's awkward. Moving on. The Eurovision stage, we've got four backup singers and Frederik and Regina. Both in black and pink theme. It's very nice. But yeah, they're perfect.
They were flawless. Like, it was fantastic.
Like, wow. It's funny, listeners, because we've been going sort of backwards with watching the DVDs.
Yeah.
So where have we hit now? I think we're in 2006 now.
Yeah, so that's the next one.
Yeah, so 2006 is the next one. And then, of course, unfortunately... The EBU, I'm going to blame the EBU. They've actually removed a lot of old contests from YouTube. So we found this really, really scary site that we're going to try out, and we'll let you know if it works, because once we get to 2004, that's it. We don't have anything earlier than that.
There's no DVDs.
No, there's no DVDs. So officially. Bootleg. But yeah, we'll let you know if that works out well and they're not really crappy quality.
Well, if the EBU wants to make a little bit of moolah, do made-to-order DVDs of past Eurovision contests prior to 2004.
That. Oh my God, that would be awesome.
I know.
Because I really want to see the real, like, early ones of what they've actually got left.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. Oh, well, moving on from things that we can hold and things that we can use.
Yes.
Our next song. It's a nice segue. Did you like that?
I did
that.
Yeah. Here's Paper by Svala from 2017.
Under the water, trying to pull me under, I reach for you, I reach for you. You can throw it all at me, I won't give you up. I can handle all your pain, take it as it comes. I love you right, but you make me feel like
Svala Björn Vinskotja, born 1977, is an Icelandic singer and songwriter. Svala is the daughter of a well-known Icelandic singer, Björgvin Halldórsson. There you get the naming convention.
Yes.
Right there. She started singing at a very young age, being her father's backing vocalist for one of his albums when she was 7 years old. Svala also had her first number one hit in Iceland when she was 9 years old. Wow. She has also studied ballet. The song came 15th in the semi-final on 60 points.
I was shattered when it ended up in the semi-final. Boo!
I think, and we'll get into this later as well, Iceland has been treated very poorly lately, just like Switzerland.
I know, it's so sad. The official clip, we've got Svala in a factory. Now, you thought it was a boat.
Initially, I thought it was a ship, some sort of ship, but you made a good suggestion that it's possibly not because there's no, you know, lips in the
Yeah, so she doorway. Walks through a lot of doors in this space and she doesn't step up to get over those lips yeah. that you have to have in ships in case, you know, you spring a leak.
Well, it's very industrial anyway.
It's very industrial and she's in this gigantic coat because it looks really cold. Then we take the coat off and we've got sort of these amazing feathers happening. She's got this real kind of 80s vibe about her look.
Yes.
And we have so many lasers. Lasers, 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 lasers. One thing we didn't watch was the national final, and that was very 80s and lots of lasers. So I'm surprised the official clip wasn't the same as that. And also the Eurovision stage performance. They didn't go full on 80s on it. Maybe they should have.
Yeah.
She's all in white with a cape and she's got like the biggest platform shoes you have ever seen.
Oh, my God, yes.
I don't even know how she can move. Now, the background's really busy. It goes from kind of soft, sort of, I guess you could say Icelandic.
Yeah.
Soft graphics. And then it goes really quite hard lines and stuff like that all the way through the film. And lots of lasers coming out at the back. But she harnesses that wind machine with this amazing cape that she's got. And I only just realised watching this back, and I didn't really look at it last year, but she's got a tattoo on her chest.
Yes.
And they've actually stuck, like, stickers on her chest so it makes her
shine.
Yeah, she's all shiny. They're all holographic stickers, which I thought was kind of cool. Look, I was quite devastated when this didn't make it through.
Yes, so was I. I thought it was a you know, a qualifier. But again, listening to it back today, the live version, you could tell that something was off.
Mm.
And I didn't pick it up when I first watched it, but I think it wasn't her. She was fine. I thought her backing vocalists were a little too loud.
There were some strange things that happened in Kiev audio-wise, and yeah. there were some very strange things that happened production-wise in Kiev. Remember that first semi-final? I'm pretty sure the director was drunk.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
There were some very interesting camera angles happening. But, yeah, I agree with you because, unfortunately, we've seen this with a lot of other acts, especially from 2017, where they've really put the levels up a little too high on the backing vocals. And we know that they do sound checks, you know, at back of house. So I don't understand how that could happen. But, yeah, we kind of lost her and she's got a really strong voice.
Yeah.
And we kind of lost her with these booming background vocalists, which was really strange. Yeah. But she was a trooper and she got through the whole thing and she looked really quite genuinely happy with her performance.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
But you didn't make the bloody final.
And 15th is pretty, it's pretty low, even through those valid criticisms. I thought, if anything, it would be close to the 10.
And we will talk a little bit about the block once we get to Iceland in Eurovision too, which is very surprising why Iceland hasn't made it through. And we're not talking about Ari from this year, who of course sadly did not make the podcast because that was our choice. Did you like that?
Yeah, so funny.
Look, beautiful boy, very nice man, just
the song
didn't
is,
get man. It over the line because it wasn't a great song. Now, this history, you said it was quite light on. It doesn't even look light on when I'm looking at the script.
Maybe it's all the long words.
Maybe it is all the long words. Okay, so strap yourselves in. I'm going to get these things wrong, and you're going to get these things wrong, but we're going to try our best. According to the Landmagergok, I did it fine the first time. Now I've stuffed it up anyway. And is Langebok. Monks known as the Papa lived in Iceland before Scandinavian settlers arrived, possibly members of the Hiberno Scottish mission. Recent archaeological excavations have revealed the ruins of a cabin in Hafnia in the Arikanese Peninsula. In 2016, archaeologists uncovered a longhouse of these Strophanurson. I'm sorry, that's got so many hats. We've got two little things over the top, and then we've got little hats on the O's. I should have looked that word up, shouldn't I?
Struverjaw.
Hey, that actually sounds good. That has been dated to as early as 800. Swedish Viking explorer Gabor Svavarsson was the first to circumnavigate Iceland in 870 and established that it was an island. Well, that's good. He stayed over winter and built a house in Húsavík. Gabor departed the following summer, but one of his men, Natfari, decided to stay behind with two slaves. Natfari settled in what is known as Natfariq.
Really?
And then he and his slaves became the first permanent residents of Iceland. The Norwegian Norse chieftain Ingifor Anarson,
which you mentioned at the start,
I did, built his homestead in present-day Reykjavik in 874. He was followed by many other immigrant settlers, largely Scandinavians and their thralls, many of whom were Scottish or Irish. By 930, not the time, most arable land on the island had been claimed. The Althing, a legislative judicial assembly, was initiated to regulate the Icelandic Commonwealth. The period of these early settlements coincided with the medieval warm period, when temperatures like those of the early 20th century. At this time, about 25% of Iceland was covered with forest. Christianity was adopted by consensus around 999 or 1000 AD, although Norse paganism persisted among some of the segments of the population for many years afterwards. The Icelandic Commonwealth lasted until the 13th century, when the political system devised by the original settlers proved unable to cope with the increasing power of the Icelandic chieftains. The internal struggles and civil strife in the age of the Sturlungs led to the signing of the Old Covenant in 1262, which ended the Commonwealth and brought Iceland under the Norwegian crown. Possession of Iceland passed from the Norwegian Empire to the Kalmar Union in 1415, when the kingdoms of Norway, Denmark, and Sweden were united. After the breakup of the Union in 1523, it remained a Norwegian dependency as part of Denmark-Norway.
In the ensuing centuries, Iceland became one of the poorest countries in Europe. Infertile soil, volcanic eruptions, deforestation, and an unforgiving climate made for harsh life in a society where subsistence depended almost entirely on agriculture. Now, this is where it gets scary. The Black Death swept Iceland twice, first in 1402 to 1404, and again in 1494 to 1495. The former outbreak killed 50 to 60% of the population, and the latter 30 to 50%.
Wow.
Ooh, it gets worse later on. Around the middle of the 16th century, as part of the Protestant Reformation, King Christian III of Denmark began to impose Lutheranism on all his subjects. The country subsequently became officially Lutheran, and Lutheranism has since remained the dominant religion. In the 17th and 18th centuries, Denmark imposed harsh trade restrictions on Iceland. Natural disasters, including volcanic eruption and disease, contributed to a decreasing population. Of course. Pirates from several countries raided Iceland's coastal settlements and abducted people into slavery. It wasn't a good time.
No.
A great smallpox epidemic in the 18th century killed around a third of the population. In 1783, the Lucky volcano erupted with devastating effects. In the years following the eruption, known as the Mist Hardships, over half of all livestock died in the country. Around a quarter of the population died in the ensuing famine.
Yikes!
Not a good time to be in Iceland. In 1814, following the Napoleonic Wars, Denmark-Norway was broken up into two separate kingdoms via the Treaty of Kiel. but Iceland remained a Danish dependency. Throughout the 19th century, the country's climate continued to grow colder, resulting in mass emigration to the New World, particularly to areas in Canada.
Wind Machine Podcast.
The Icelandic independence movement took shape in the 1850s based on the burgeoning Icelandic nationalism. In 1874, Denmark granted Iceland a constitution and limited home rule. Well, that was nice. This was expanded in 1904, and Hannes Hafstein served as the first Prime Minister of Iceland in the Danish cabinet. The Danish-Icelandic Act of Union, an agreement with Denmark signed on the 1st of December 1918 and valid for 25 years, recognised Iceland as a fully sovereign and independent state in a personal union with Denmark. The government of Iceland established an embassy in Copenhagen and requested that Denmark carry out on its behalf certain defence and foreign affairs matters. Danish embassies around the world displayed two coats of arms and two flags, those of the Kingdom of Denmark and those of the Kingdom of Iceland. Iceland's legal position became comparable to those countries belonging to the Commonwealth of Nations.
So think of that union as, you know, Denmark being the UK and Iceland being Australia.
Yeah. During World War II, Iceland joined Denmark in asserting neutrality. After the German occupation of Denmark on the 9th of April 1940, the Althing replaced the king with a regent and declared that the Icelandic government would take over the full implementation of its defence and foreign affairs. A month later, British armed forces invaded and occupied the country, violating Icelandic neutrality. In 1941, the government of Iceland invited the United States to take over its defence so that Britain could use its troops elsewhere. On the 31st of December 1943, the Danish-Icelandic Act of Union expired after the 25 years. Beginning on the 20th of May 1944, Icelanders voted in a four-day plebiscite on whether to terminate the personal union with Denmark, abolish the monarchy, and establish a republic. Iceland formally became a republic on the 17th of June 1944, with Sveinn Björnsson as the first president.
Isn't he a cheese, Björnsson?
Yes. It's a very nice cheese, especially the garlic one.
In 1946, the US Defence Force left Iceland. That was good. The nation formally became a member of NATO on the 30th of March 1949. On the 5th of May 1951, a defence agreement was signed with the United States. Oh, here we go. American troops returned to Iceland as the Iceland Defence Force and remained throughout the Cold War. The US withdrew the last of its forces on the 30th of September 2006. Yeah, that's
they
good.
They hung around for a while, yeah, didn't they?
They like doing that, you know, staying in other countries where they're not really welcome. Iceland prospered during the Second World War. The immediate post-war period was followed by substantial economic growth, driven by industrialisation of the fishing industry and the US Marshall Plan program, through which Icelanders received the most aid per capita of any European country. The 70s were marked by the Cod Wars, not the Cold Wars, the Cod Wars, several disputes with the United Kingdom over Iceland's extension of its fishing limits. You can't fish here. Throughout the 1990s, the country expanded its international role and developed a foreign policy oriented toward humanitarian and peacekeeping causes. Iceland provided aid and expertise to various NATO-led interventions in Bosnia, Kosovo, and Iraq. Iceland joined the European Economic Area in 1994, after which the economy was greatly diversified and liberalised. International economic relations increased further until 2001, when Iceland's newly deregulated banks began to raise massive amounts of external debt, contributing to a 32% increase in Iceland's gross national income between 2002 and 2007. Now, that sounds really very not interesting, But it leads to the next part.
Mm.
It was quickly becoming one of the most prosperous countries in the world, but was hit so hard by the global financial crisis. And it was in the news at the time. It's like Iceland was one of the worst countries affected.
Yep.
The crisis resulted in the greatest migration from Iceland since 1887. Iceland's economy, though, did stabilise and grew by 1.6% by 2012. And it's actually now in a really good position due to the current government and economic policies.
Wow.
Yeah, massive turnaround.
Geez, you think they've gone through enough?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Now we're going to talk about a little bit of religion. The registers Iceland keeps a count of the religious affiliation of every Icelandic citizen. In 2017, Icelanders were divided into religious groups as followed. 67% were members of the Church of Iceland, which is still Lutheran. 12% members of other Christian denominations. 11% of other religions and not specified. That's kind of me.
Yeah.
7% were unaffiliated. 1% of members of the Germanic heathen group.
Okay.
I thought that sounded awesome. Can we join them? Yeah. 0.1% of members were of the Icelandic Ethical Humanist Association. And 0.6 members were Zurist groups. Iceland is a very secular country. As with other Nordic nations, religious attendance is relatively low. The statistics represent administrative membership of religious organisations, which does not necessarily reflect on the belief demographics of the population.
Of course.
According to a study published in 2001, 23% of inhabitants are either atheist or agnostic. A Gallup poll conducted in 2012 found that 57% of Icelanders considered themselves religious, 31% considered themselves non-religious, while 10% defined themselves as convinced atheists.
Oh, that old chestnut.
I know, placing Iceland among the 10 countries with the highest proportions of atheists in the world.
Woo!
How do you know they're atheists? Because they tell you.
So true, so true, so true.
I'm going to start an agnostic movement. I've decided.
Okay.
I'm going to make a flag and everything. It's going to be great. It's going to have a song that we can all march to because we're just sitting on the fence until the end comes.
Well, you're sure telling me about it, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, got to hedge the bets. Not really sure if there's anything after death, but we're not entirely sure that there is.
Tell me, what do you think of this next song?
I really love it.
From 2000, here's Tell Me by August and Telma.
Fit and pack our bags tonight and go wherever
August and Telma are a pop duo group from Iceland. They comprise members Einar August Vajason and Telma Augustadóttir. Einar, aka August, born 1973, is an Icelandic singer and radio personality. He became known as the singer of the band Skimor. Telma, born 1977, is an Icelandic singer.
And we have no other information on her. I even went to page 3 of Google.
Wow.
I know.
The song came 12th in the final on 45 points.
Now, with everything that happens sort of around 2000, you don't really have an official clip. There's a few sort of floating around on YouTube which look like kind of national finals or their fan videos. So we don't actually have anything that's stamped Eurovision.tv. But the Eurovision stage is quite amazing.
Oh, yes.
I love how 2000 now looks incredibly dated.
Oh, God, doesn't
it's
it?
It's frightening, isn't it? I was like, 2000, let me think. I was at uni. Crap, that was ages ago now. Isn't it frightening?
Yeah.
Now, this performance is all the good things about the early noughties.
That's right.
We've got four backup singers, and August is in a white pants / skirt outfit. Now, I don't know about you, but I was really into wearing pants and skirts at the same time.
I wasn't sure whether he just cut up some, you know, bed sheets and, you know,
I don't know.
Did a toga party. You know?
But then Telma is wearing a two-tone pink number that looks kind of the same as August's.
But hers seemed more like a garbage bag, to be honest. I'm sorry.
The amazing thing is, while I was looking up Telma, trying to find any kind of information, like even what colour she likes, I couldn't find a thing, but I did stumble across a very old blog post from WeeWee Blogs.
Oh, really?
And it was basically what the hell happened in the noughties in fashion. She had this amazing kind of bird's nest hairdo, and I could never achieve that. So I failed the early noughties because I couldn't do that kind of bitty, sticky, uppy bird's nest hair thing. And I was really upset. And even August was doing it as well.
Mm.
But yeah, like the pants and skirt thing, I think they should come back. I enjoyed wearing pants and a skirt at the same time. A lady in New York in about 1998, when I was over there for uni, she walked up to me and she said, "Hey girl, did you not know what you were going to wear today and you decided to wear both?" It's exactly true. That was on the subway. And then, of course, I opened my mouth and then she crapped herself because I was Australian.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was, you know, "Hey girl, could you not make up your mind?" Yeah. No, it's very true. I couldn't make up my mind either. But, you know, look, the white probably helped this song because we know that white does well.
That's right.
So good on you, August, for doing a bit of extra clothing.
Yes.
But his arms are bare. But skirt and pants. I don't know. Whatever.
Let's just go on to the next topic.
Yeah, look, I don't even think, I can't even think of
there's no segue.
There's no segue from pants and skirts to geography, climate and politics. So we're just going to go for it. A geologically young land, Iceland, is located on both the Iceland hotspot and the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which runs right through it. Its location means that the island is highly geologically active with many volcanoes. The volcanic eruption of Laki in 1783 and 1784, which we mentioned before, caused a famine that killed nearly a quarter of the island's population. Not good. In addition, the eruption caused dust clouds and haze to appear over most of Europe and parts of Asia and Africa for several months afterwards, affecting climates in other areas. That's amazing. Iceland has many geysers. Now, the thing is, there's always a fight about whether or not it's geyser or geezer, but I always say geyser because it's got a Y in it.
Mm. And plus, old people don't cause certain climatic
changes.
No,
that's
changes.
True. No, they do fart a lot, but they don't really know. So Iceland has a lot of geysers, including Geyser. Uh-huh. which the English word is derived, and the famous scotia, which erupts every 8 to 10 minutes. After a phase of inactivity, Geyser started erupting again after a series of earthquakes in 2000.
Was that after it watched the performance of Iceland's August and Thelma?
Maybe. Geyser has since grown quieter and does not erupt as often. With the widespread availability of geothermal power and the harnessing of many rivers and waterfalls for hydroelectricity, most residents have access to inexpensive hot water, heating and electricity.
The climate of Iceland's coast is subarctic. The warm North Atlantic current ensures generally higher annual temperatures than in most places of similar latitude in the world. Despite its proximity to the Arctic, the island's coasts remain ice-free through the winter. Ice incursions are rare, the last having occurred on the north coast in 1969. The climate varies between different parts of the island. Generally speaking, the south coast is warmer, wetter, and windier than the north. The central highlands are the coldest part of the country. Low-lying inland areas in the north are the most arid. Snowfall in winter is more common in the north than the south. The highest air temperature recorded was 30.5 degrees on the 22nd of June 1939 at Tagahorn on the southeastern coast. The lowest was minus 38 degrees centigrade on the 22nd of January 1918 at Gristadur and Muruddurar in the northeast. The temperature records for Reykjavik are 26.2 degrees and minus 24.5 degrees, so it's quite mild.
Very mild. Iceland is a representative democracy and a parliamentary republic. The modern parliament, the Althing, was founded in 1845 as an advisory board to the Danish monarch. It currently has 63 members elected for a maximum period of 4 years. The president is elected by popular vote for the term of 4 years with no term limit. The elections for president, the Althing, and local municipal councils are held separately every 4 years. The president of Iceland is a largely ceremonial head of state and serves as a diplomat, but also vetoes laws by the parliament and puts them to a national referendum. The head of government is the Prime Minister, who, together with the Cabinet, is responsible for an executive government. The Cabinet is appointed by the President after a general election to the Althing. However, the appointment is usually negotiated by the leaders of the political parties, who decide among themselves after discussions which parties can form the government and how to distribute the seats under the constitution that has a majority support in the Althing. Only when party leaders are unable to reach a conclusion by themselves within a reasonable time span does the president exercise their power and appoint the cabinet personally. This has not happened since the republic was founded in 1944. Iceland was the first country in the world to have a political party formed and led entirely by women. Known as the Women's List or the Women's Alliance, it was founded in 1983 to advance the political, economic, and social needs of women. After participating in its first parliamentary elections, the Women's List helped increase the population of female parliamentarians by 15%. Although it disbanded in 1999, merging with the Social Democratic Alliance, it has left a lasting influence on Iceland's politics. Every major party has a 40% quota of women, and in 2009, nearly a third of the members of parliament were female, compared to the global average of just 16%. Following the 2016 elections, 48% of members of parliament were female.
Iceland has no standing army, but the Icelandic Coast Guard, which also maintains the Iceland Air Defence System and an Iceland Crisis Response Unit to support peacekeeping missions, perform paramilitary functions. The Iceland Defence Force, the IDF, was a military command of the United States Air Forces from 1951 to 2006. The IDF, created at the request of NATO, came into existence when the United States signed an agreement to provide for the defence of Iceland. The IDF was consisted of civilian Icelanders and military members of other NATO nations. The IDF was downsized after the end of the Cold War.
It's quite amazing because you look at Iceland and geographically it's like kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's all by its lonesome.
Like, is anyone really going to go and hurt Iceland? Because why would they want to? It sounds really nice.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to unless you wanted to steal their sheep?
Unless the only thing I would think, it would be a staging ground for either Western nations such as the US or Russia to use to attack the other. I don't know. Don't get any thoughts about that.
Yeah, don't get
guys.
Any ideas, please. Speaking about ideas, there is something that is very sad in our fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to take a moment for Greta.
Yes.
Even though Greta did really well in 2012, we had to include this song as a moment of respect.
Mm-hmm.
From 2016, here's Hear Them Calling by Greta Salome.
Can you hear them calling? Oh, they're calling out tonight. Now the skies are burning. Oh, they burn so bright. We shiver as we step into the cold, cold night. Then we're running, we are running now. I hear them calling me. I hear them whispering. They're singing.
Greta Salome Stefandóttir, that sounds good, doesn't it? Was born in 1986 and is an Icelandic singer, songwriter, and violinist with the Icelandic Symphony Orchestra, and she was robbed. She represented Iceland in the Eurovision Song Contest in Baku in 2012 with a duet with singer Jonsi and the song Never Forget. They finished 20th place. On 46 points.
And you didn't want me to have this song in?
No, because it's justice for Greta.
OK.
Okay.
She made the final that year. She didn't make it for this one. She represented Iceland again, this time as a soloist in 2016. This song was originally performed as the Icelandic version Rudinar, but was changed to English for the contest. The song came 14th in the semi-final on 51 points, and this is justice for Greta.
This is an absolute tragedy in the entire Eurovision community.
It is a tragedy, and I still cannot cope. It's like 2 years later, and I'm still...
It just... Beggars belief.
It hurts my heart.
Like, how could this not have made the final?
I just don't know.
I think, wasn't this one of the early favourites or something? This just doesn't make sense.
I don't get it. Honestly, I just don't get it. Look, the national final is the official clip. Mm. And it's pretty much a carbon copy of what they put on the stage. So we're not going to talk about it. We're going to talk about what happened at Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
So... Greta is in this kind of leather, can I say pantsuit?
Yeah.
High boots, short shorts, and these amazing kind of strings that come off of her arms. And she's wearing pretty much something very similar for the official clip, which was the national final. A lot of it is backlit, so it's very dramatic.
Yeah.
We don't really see her face for a lot of the start. We just basically see her silhouette and her hair. She falls to the floor and they actually use the LEDs that were in the floor in 2016, which was very cool. Then there's a lot of grabby hands. Grabby hands. They're all on the LED behind us. Grabby, 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 grabby. And then something interesting happens, which I still can't figure out how this works. We see Greta singing, but then she crumbles to rubble, and I'm like, where the hell is the real Greta? Oh no, there she is.
Yeah.
That always freaks me out. That... Like, I can't get it right in my brain how they did that.
I know, it was just amazing.
And then, of course, we've got they're coming home, and that amazing kind of... It's always reminded me of Bells, that section of the
bells.
Song. So she bends back and it's like all of this stuff just shoots out of her chest. It's not like Alien, but it's like all this kind of gunk, Garmenbosia, flies out of her chest, right? It's so amazing. And then there's this whole kind of theme of birds and... people, but who are they and why are they coming?
I don't know.
You know what? I used to think, listening to this song, that it was about aliens.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I hear them coming.
Oh.
Conspiracy. I know. But yeah, look, this song was absolutely robbed at Eurovision and I will never forgive anybody.
I just, nah. It's one of the most robbed songs ever.
And... honestly, that staging was phenomenal.
It was just amazing altogether.
I can't. But I have a feeling that Iceland really needed help from their block and they didn't get it. So how about you talk about Iceland and Eurovision?
Yeah, nice one. Mm. Iceland has participated in the Eurovision Song Contest 31 times since its debut in 1986, missing only two contests since then in 1998 and 2002, when prevented from competing due to finishing outside qualification places the preceding years. Iceland is the only Nordic country that has yet to win the Eurovision Song Contest. The Icelandic broadcaster for the contest is RUV. The country's best result is two second-place finishes in 1999 and in 2009. Since the introduction of the semi-final round in 2004, Iceland has failed to qualify for the final seven times, including the last 4 years. Iceland has come last three times, 1989, along with the dreaded null points, 2001 and 2018.
Poor Ari.
We have a few repeat offenders in Iceland, either as soloists in duets or groups, or doing backup vocals. Sigur Beintenstor has participated four times, 1990, 92, 94 and 2007. Hera Bjork has participated four times, 2008, 2009, 2010 and 2015. Selma Bjørnsdottir, 1999 and 2005. Eriko Hakulson, 1987 and 2007. Jon Josef Snabbåsen, 2004 and 2010. And Greta Salome, of course, in 2012 and 2016. Since 2000, Iceland have performed in English every year except for 2013, which was in Icelandic, and the 2010 song, which had some French in it. Iceland usually give their highest points to Sweden, Denmark and Norway, naturally, and receive their most points from Sweden, Denmark, Norway, naturally. Yeah.
I don't know what was going on with Sweden, Denmark and Norway in 2016, but pull your socks up!
Yeah.
Honestly! They have to depend on you, poor Iceland. But, yeah. Look, the 2001 song is actually hilarious. And, yeah, I feel bad for Ari from this year. He cried on stage. Like, how could you... Oh, poor darling. Look, maybe he can come back.
With a better song.
With a better song. Yeah, with a better song. That would be nice. And maybe a better outfit.
You know what was a really great song?
Ooh, could it be this one?
I think so.
From 2009, here is It True by Johanna.
Say you really know me, you're not afraid to show me what is in your eyes. So tell me about the rumors, are the only rumors, are the only lies. Falling out of a perfect
Jotsdottir. I'm so sorry. This is why people just call you Johanna, I think. I was born in 1990. Yes, settle down, Mark. Is an Icelandic singer and started performing on stage at the age of 9 after participating in singing classes. Her first album, titled Johanna Gurren 9, was released in 2000 and contained mostly international pop hits that had been translated into Icelandic language, like Torn, Genie in a Bottle, and I'll Be There. Oh, look, I'm so on board for Icelandic versions of those songs.
Yeah.
She participated at Eurovision in 2009, but also took part in 2011 and 2013 national finals and read out the Icelandic votes in 2010. The song came second in the final on 218 points and is currently their record number of points.
Mm.
So that's nice. She's very adorable. Like, I just want to scoop her up and...
yes.
Feed her some soup.
Yes.
The official clip, she's on clouds, which is very nice. And we have three costume changes. That's always good. But there's really not a lot happening. It's just her.
It's just her standing around.
On the clouds.
Yep.
It's very nice. The Eurovision stage, we have a cello, three backing singers, and a guitarist. Now, we've got to talk about this blue dress. She is so adorable, but they've put her in one of those little bathroom doily things that you put over your toilet rolls.
Yes.
It's kind of something that my grandmother had in her house in Geelong.
Yeah.
Like, you'd walk in and there'd be this scary doll sitting on the loo paper next to you. Eek! She would judge you. And then, of course, everything was blue staging.
Yeah.
So it was very blue. But she was excellent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she was only, what, 19 when she did this. Her vocals were flawless.
And her connection with the camera was also flawless.
Oh, very much so. She was very good. She was very earnest.
Earnest.
You know, is it true? Is it over? Did I stuff it up?
Yep.
You know, what happened? How can I fix it? All of that stuff. It's very, very good to the camera. Yeah, she definitely had a nice connection with the audience, which probably made a second. But yeah, good on you, Iceland.
Hmm.
I think second was quite good for that song.
Yes.
Yes, and of course, you know, she missed out to Alexander with his fiddle. Look, I can't complain. Fairy Tale is still a good song, but we won't talk about the song from this year.
No.
Step one.
Get over it.
Step two.
Get over it again.
We're at the end.
Hey, another one.
Oh, my God. Next episode will be based on whichever country we draw out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom. All countries with five songs or more from 2000 onwards get a turn, and we only have four left.
Spain, Belarus, Lithuania, Montenegro. Which one will it be?
Could I have a drum roll, please?
I had a feeling it'd be this one.
So did I. Yolanda Sand, it's very nice to have you in the booth again. I just want you to make sure we have a valid result.
Yes, let me just check whether my linen is covered with feathers. Yes.
Oh, goodness. He's let it go now. Episode 44 of the Wind Machine podcast. We're going to Montenegro.
Yay, Slavko country.
Yay. So that's kind of cool because, you know, we've met like two Eurovision entries.
Yes.
Which is pretty impressive when we live in Australia and we don't actually go to Eurovision yet. So that's good. Oh, look, justice for Slavko.
I know. Pretty much.
Oh, my God. Like, one of the nicest men ever and probably one of the best huggers I've ever experienced.
Oh, yeah.
You know, amazing. Montenegro has some very interesting songs. We've got Spacemen.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I love that song. Oh.
And also, because of our special Eurovision rules, we can go back to the songs that they shared with Serbia.
Yep.
So they're back in the ring for this one. So you never know what could happen. Before we finish, may we please have the legal announcement?
We at Wind Machine Podcast have taken every legal step allowed to us to present this podcast with a current APRA license, and we claim fair use for the music played. We are not affiliated with the EBU, its partners, or SBS. We are just fans.
Do you know anything about Montenegro, really?
Other than
the flag, which, of course, we've had to learn.
Not much, to be honest.
Nah, me either.
No.
It's one of those countries that I just don't know.
Its capital is Podgorica?
Hey, Fleur would be impressed. Fleur would like that. Hi, Fleur. Yeah, well, the next 2 weeks are going to be really, really interesting. Now, the only thing is, we're going to be a little bit longer than 2 weeks because someone has a birthday.
Would that be you, Miss
Danny? Yeah, it would be me. So don't be too alarmed if it goes out into 3 weeks.
Yeah.
We're still working on stuff. It's just we only really have time on the weekends to record and edit these days. All right, so I've been Danny Tregoning, and you can find me on Twitter, DanieTreg.
And I'm Mark Perkins. You can find me on Twitter as well, at MarkPerkinsVO.
We're still doing the 30 days of Eurovision.
Which has been amazing.
Which has been awesome fun. So you can follow along at our Twitter account, Wind Machine Pod, or go to our Facebook page, which is Wind Machine Podcast, and follow along.
You can also follow along on any other podcast app such as TuneIn, Podbean, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Mixcloud, you name it.
We can even come to your house and just talk at you if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're quite open to that because we're annoying and we like to talk about Eurovision a lot.
We'll even pay you for our time. No. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Anyway,
don't forget the website.
Oh, yes. And our website, if you need to look back on old episodes, even the first episode, if you want to listen to the whole of Polaplonk. Polaponk. I always get it wrong. Polaponk. Put your teeth in. you can listen to the full thing of that. Yep. And episode one's a bit weird, though. But yeah, it's okay. Like, it was our first. It was supposed to be weird.
You always remember your first.
You always remember your first. But all of the podcasts are in the archive on our website, which is windmachinepodcast.com. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
We'll be back soon with episode 44, Montenegro. Until then,
goodbye.
Bye-bye.